Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the flat-footed voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Flat-footed indeed. Good evening.
Yes,
good evening. I'm going to make a point because this is the first evening podcast that we've done.
I think it might just be.
Pretty sure it is. Going to have a very different feel about this evening. I've got a feeling. Normally in the morning, we're a little bit pumped, quite tense. You know, you wake up and you're wanting to get going in the day, whereas I think today it's a bit different in the evening, I find. You know, the day has been and gone. Of course, we've had a glorious night together. We've watched the football today. We've cracked open a bottle of red. You're not drinking, though, this evening.
No, you've cracked open a bottle of red.
This is true. Yes. Can I not tempt you?
No, sorry.
Just one glass. It's good for you. Antioxidants.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a very relaxed feel, I feel, a lot of feel today. As I'm talking, I feel like Paul McKenna. Paul McKenna, that real nice, soothing, deep voice, a little bit hypnotic. You know, this is where I feel I should probably give you a warning that please don't listen to this podcast if you are driving a vehicle right now, because you could fall asleep for the content as much as anything.
Met him once before, actually, Paul McKenna. Really? Sat, funnily enough, in his Beverly Hills mansion, believe it or not.
Wow.
Opposite him, as he was talking to me, he was kind of doing what you're saying, and I was a little bit scared.
Did he like reel you in?
He looked at me in a way that no other man has ever looked at me before.
Really?
Yeah, it wasn't particularly pleasant, I'm not going to lie, because I felt like he was trying to get inside my mind and do his hypnosis thing.
They say, don't look into the eyes, don't look into the eyes, look around the eyes. You've got some stories.
I do.
Every now and then, one or two crop up. Mm. You know, people always say to me, who is that guy that does the podcast with you? And actually, I feel at some point we should do a Matt Beadle podcast. You know, we interview all of these goalkeepers, wonderful stories up and down the country, all over the globe. Yet no one knows the man, the mystery, the myth.
Not about me, mate.
No.
Purely a conduit on this podcast, just to tie it all in. It's all the Richard Lee show and any other goalkeeper we have.
You are just a cog, my friend. Just a big old cog.
A giant cog. Anyway,
yes. We
were talking about flat-footedness because, quite remarkably, now I want you, by the way, to explain this exactly how you explained it in the kitchen earlier, right? I want it verbatim.
And I got a bit angry.
Yes, because
that was before
brilliant.
I had the glass of wine.
It was. Could be even, well, mind you, slightly more relaxed now, I suppose.
Mm, true.
But we had, on Thursday evening, quite remarkably, Jamie and Merce, part two. Only this time, Carragher was replaced with Redknapp. It was the second leg of the Carabao Cup semi-final. This time between Liverpool, because they were at home against... Oh, no, they weren't. Sorry, it was at the Emirates, wasn't it?
That's
Arsenal
right.
were at home. Arsenal, Liverpool. The opening goal from Diogo Jota.
Mm.
Aaron Ramsdale, talk to me.
Well, where do we start? Do we want to say the comments first? Have you got the comments?
Well, they essentially were that he was flat-footed.
It was the moment where, I'm right in saying this, that Merce asked Jamie Redknapp to explain what had happened. As if...
Yeah.
Jamie Redknapp would know. And then he was fumbling. He used a few of the classic cliches, including flat-footed, which of all things you can call Aaron Ramsdale. I mean, come on, that's the last thing. And I know what they're trying to say. But again, there was so much about it that was just wrong in the analysis. They couldn't quite figure out how seemingly the ball had beaten him in the way that it had. Yes, it wasn't right in the corner. Yes, it wasn't struck at 100 miles an hour. So how did it beat him? And it was just... It was entertaining to watch two people flounder in the way that they were, trying to find an explanation, but having no knowledge to base any of their points on. So we got the flat-footed. We got his guest. That was another one. He's gambled.
He's gambled.
He hasn't gambled. Come on.
So, I've actually got... I've just scrolled down now and I've seen that I have written down. So let's have a look. Goalkeeper's gambled, literally gone in the middle of the goal. He's got his legs really wide where he can go off either foot. Is it flat-footed or has he jumped up at the time? When it goes down, it's only down the side of him. There you go.
And so we were then entertained for, it felt like minutes, maybe hours. But no, look, what actually happened for me, I'll give my analysis for what it's worth. In fairness, could Aaron Ramsdale have done something slightly different? Potentially. I think he was about 4 or 5 yards from his goal. The fact that he was so far down the line, I don't think he necessarily needs to be that far down the line. When the ball's 16 yards, is that going to close down the angle all that much? Probably not. I think he just got a little bit attracted, which I think as a goalkeeper and most of us goalkeepers listening in, we've all been there. Naturally, you want to get that little bit closer. Now, in a perfect world, it has stayed 2 yards. Of course, that gives him more reaction time, maybe allows him to see it a little bit better. I think that's the reason we see him take the move to his left, because of course there are bodies in the way, he can't see the ball. So in the end, what happens, he's 4 or 5 yards out, takes a slight move to his left. The moment that happens, and it's one of those odd strikes where it's struck so badly that it's actually curling inwards, which makes no sense given the fact it struck with his right foot to Aaron Ramsdale's right, and yet it cuts back in because it's such a terrible strike. So I suppose it's the perfect storm of all that could go wrong in a moment. Now, look, in a perfect world, had he been 2 yards off his line, then of course that extra little bit of reaction time would have helped him. However, that being said, and again, we're going to be talking about several very good Aaron Ramsdale moments again in this podcast, one in particular. So the way in which he keeps goal, he is quite an aggressive goalkeeper. He does come down the line that little bit further. So I'm sure he'll look at this and maybe take one or two pointers from it. But similarly, we spoke about it before, the way in which someone keeps goal can work for you in several situations, but at the same time can work against you. And I just think in this moment, the fact that he is so aggressive, front-footed, wants to come down the line that little bit further, didn't work in his favour.
Here's one for you.
Go.
You've just said that it was a terrible strike.
Terrible.
Now, if we take it from a goalkeeper's perspective, and the great Peter Schmeichel said this himself, that no save is unorthodox, because if you save it and keep it out the goal, you save it, you've done your job. Has Diogo Jota there just done his job? It's ended up in the back of the net. Yeah. So is it a terrible strike or not?
Well, this is it. If he strikes it as he means to, there's a good chance Aaron Ramsdale makes a save. This is the irony of this situation. But it's just one of those. I think the fact that it was so unusual, you know, he's had a full swing, barely caught the ball, which has meant that it's got the weird spin that it does and the weird shape that it does. And it kind of, essentially, the bit where I'll back Aaron Ramsdale up is that in that moment, if you're going to read the game and you're going on percentages, what he actually did would be such a small percentage that it goes back across you, so back to Aaron Ramsdale's right, but somehow cuts back in towards the middle of the goal. That is almost impossible to do. I'm sure if you said to Jota, go and do it, you've got 100 efforts now, go and do that again, probably struggle to do it. It was just one of those things that in that moment, he scuffed it so badly that it's then wrong-footed. That's the word I'd use. It's not flat-footed, wrong-footed, which of course it's wrong-footed him because it's so unusual. But again, it was just them trying to put this into words. And again, not having stood in goal, not quite knowing what happened, all they could see is that it was a bad strike that's ended 2 or 3 yards from the post and it's ended in the goal. Now, of course, if you look at it in black and white and you see that, then you would question the goalkeeper. But of course, goalkeeping isn't black and white. And in this situation, the key for me, again, just ever so slightly too far down the line. But that is the way that Aaron Ramsdale plays. And that's one of the reasons he's made as many saves as he had. So I think if they could take the situation and look at it from a goalkeeper's perspective, they'll understand that it's not a mistake necessarily. Yes, he might have been able to do something slightly different if he was a different style of goalkeeper. But ordinarily, him doing what he did, he would have made a lot of saves had the strike have been a regular strike, let's say.
Okay. A quick word on Quivin Kelleher.
Yeah.
Excellent. So he has been told by Jurgen Klopp that he will play in the Carabao Cup final, which will take place against Chelsea. He has added the caveat of whether he's fit or not. If he's fit, he'll play. But that is now the best part of, I think, 20 games that he's played for Liverpool. I can't think of an example in the modern era where a goalkeeper who hasn't been on loan, who's come in as a young goalkeeper and looked, I don't know, as assured for me as Quivin Kelleher looks, so calm, so composed, looks like nothing fazes him at the moment. Made a great save in that game as well from the free kick, Alexandre Lacazette.
Brilliant save, and I loved how uncomplicated he made it look. Just great footwork, got across, got a good hand to it. Again, for me, this beats most goalkeepers. The speed at which you have to get across, there's nothing more he could have done on the free kick. I say this so often on this pod, that if they get it over the wall and it's going in the top corner, ordinarily you essentially give them the goal and you just applaud them. And this couldn't have gone further in the top corner, and yet he's got across and made the save. And you're right, his body language is excellent. Looks so calm. And these are big games that he's playing in. But he looks very, very good. And I think you're right. I mean, we talk often on this pod about there is a route for goalkeepers to get to the Premier League, and 9 times out of 10, that is going on loan, and eventually you get yourself an opportunity in the Premier League. Well, he's done it a completely different way, yet he's seemingly getting more and more opportunities, and he's taking them, and I think that's key. I think we spoke about it in the pod last week, in that you kind of build your CV, and you know, ideally you go a little bit lower because you're going to have some bad moments and you want to get through them ideally when you're playing at maybe a slightly lower level, whereas they have just chucked him in, and credit to them and credit to him, he seems to be living up to the billing at the moment.
Top stuff. Shall we get on with the show?
Let's do it.
So we will start in the Premier League with the three early games today, Sunday afternoon. Arsenal, Burnley, Leicester, Brighton and Crystal Palace and Liverpool. Starting at the Emirates and Aaron Ramsdale. He was joined by Nick Pope, both England goalkeepers, of course, both battling for, at the moment it seems, still that number two spot because Jordan Pickford seems to be the outright number one. But a few good stops from Nick Pope, especially from Emile Smith Rowe in the second half. And Aaron Ramsdale, did he, right at the death, get a touch from that Dwight McNeil shot?
I think he does. It does look like he does. Certainly has it covered, it's fair to say. The save he made in the first half down to his near post was very good. In fact, we saw a couple of... We tend to have this on the pod. I find that each week there's a couple of saves that are very similar. And for me, we had it with both Ramsdale and David De Gea, we'll talk about later. Similar back on himself, where it takes an unusual deflection and you wouldn't expect it. And I thought in both cases, excellent goalkeeping, where you take up a position for the cross, where you want to be able to affect the cross, so you're quite far advanced. But of course, if it does take a deflection back towards the near post, you need to be quick enough, have the agility, the speed, in order to get back down to your near post and make the save. And I thought in both cases, David De Gea and Aaron Ramsdale did it very, very well. And Nick Pope, as you mentioned, good save with his feet in the first half. The save then down low to his right, through bodies as well, and to parry it around the post in the way that he did. In the end, it was a game-saving save.
It was indeed. The other game, Leicester 1, Brighton 1. Robert Sanchez solid in this one, but the stop from Kasper Schmeichel. Oh, glorious late on, phenomenal. Leandro Trossard.
Phenomenal. I've got this as it stands. I think my save of the day, or save of the weekend, I would say, just takes up a very Schmeichel-esque set position. Looks strong. Just the speed at which he gets down to his right and the athleticism. You're looking at me.
Just because you said a Schmeichel-esque position. You are aware his name is Kasper Schmeichel.
Yeah, so he's basically...
It doesn't have to be esque.
No,
it's
true.
A Schmeichel position.
It's his classic set position. This is the wine kicking in. No, do you know what it is? I think this is where... I don't know. I don't know, we never really talk about him and his dad in the same set, but I think they do have a slight similarity there. There was an element of his dad I saw in this save, I must say. And there's not many goalkeepers that can make this save, that can get down in the way that he did. And just the speed at which he gets down and gets that full hand to it to get it around the post, this beats most goalkeepers. It's a phenomenal save.
Okay, nice.
Did I pull myself out of the hole?
I think just about. Crystal Palace 1, Liverpool 3. Now, two major talking points in this one. Let's start with the positive one, and that being Alisson.
Yeah.
A series of saves, seemingly unbeatable. In fact, the goal scored by Palace, they had to pass round it.
It is a bizarre one because they were, and he was very, very good. You know, made some top saves. The offside in the first half, good reaction save. It did seem the amount of chances that Palace had, the finishing wasn't great. Now, I don't know, and again, we want to draw a lot of this back to goalkeepers and positivity about goalkeepers. So you do wonder, and I think we spoke about this while watching the game, whether types of goalkeepers have a certain aura or whether there is a certain fear when you're an opposing player, because the two or three examples in this game where you thought, just slot it in the corner and you'll score, and they're smashing it and Alisson's making great reaction saves. I mean, the save he made, in fairness, down to his right from the back heel, I thought was excellent, and a few other brilliant stops, in fairness, but you just felt that surely they will score here. Surely they just need to pass it in the corner, or this isn't a difficult finish. Yet they gave Alisson a chance each time, but credit to him because, again, taking up good positions, he's very calm in what he does, certainly, and he made very, very important saves. But I'm sure if you're Patrick Vieira, you're coming off thinking, how have we lost that game of football?
Yeah, absolutely. Jurgen Klopp on Alisson after the game did say, I said to him now, thank you for saving our backside again. He said, that's my job. Of course, it is very helpful to have a world-class goalkeeper at the back. There's another quote from Jurgen Klopp that I'm going to get onto in a minute, but not before we've discussed the other major talking point in this game, because I just can't believe what I was watching. And to be fair, it revolves around a ball sack. Now, we all use them as goalkeepers, right? We use them, we get through them a lot. Kevin Friend, the referee in this game, perhaps needs to put his hands down his pants and find his, because that was an absolutely disgraceful decision.
It was bizarre. While we're watching it and they're showing the replays, and it was so obviously not a foul, and everyone could see that. And yet they kept showing it, and you kind of felt like they're trying to, and even to the point then when the referee goes over to the monitor and they'd sort of cut down the footage a little bit to almost make it look a bit more like a foul. And even the referee's body, the bit that got me was the referee's body language, because he knew it wasn't a foul. And even when he's given it, the way in which he pointed to the spot was almost like a resigned, I have to point to the spot here. But you look at what Guaita actually does. Let's go back to the incident. You look at what Guaita does. He comes out on the angle and he makes the shape in order to make the save. Now, had who was the player who came through?
Diogo Jota.
Diogo Jota. So had Jota actually touched the ball in the way in which he had meant to, then he touched it towards Guaita and he probably makes the save, which is exactly what he was trying to do. The fact he misses the ball, runs into Guaita, and somehow gets the penalty. There's so much about this that was wrong. He didn't have control of the ball because he miscontrolled it. He then runs into Guaita, who's just making the save, who would have made the save had he had touched the ball. So you're watching this and thinking, logically, how are you coming to the conclusion that this could possibly be a penalty? It was just a really bizarre, well, I say a minute or two. It was about 6 minutes in the end, the amount of time the whole thing took. And it was such a shame because I was really enjoying the game. The fact that Palace was so on top and you felt they were going to get something. And in the end, that obviously killed the game, unfortunately.
Completely killed it. Completely and utterly insane decision. Just have some authority, man. And the comments I was going to say after the game from Jurgen Klopp. Now, this aggravates me because he was asked about the penalty, the third goal. It was massive, really, he said. I didn't see it back, but I don't think I have to because we thought it was and the referee did. The Crystal Palace people did not, which I understand. Now, that annoys me because don't take us all for a bunch of mugs. Like, just be honest. And maybe he shouldn't be honest because then does that have repercussions in games thereafter that referees actually do give the decision that the opposition want? But I just think, be sincere, be honest and say, yeah, it wasn't a pen. We got away with one. Don't take us all for a bunch of mugs. It really annoys me.
You're not Jürgen's biggest fan, I feel.
Insincerity, I'm not a fan of, Richard, okay. And I feel like that is it.
Yeah, I didn't see the interview. Now I feel like Arsene Wenger, but I didn't see the interview. But no, I think that I'm sure if he sees it back, I'm sure if everyone that has seen it back, they kind of brushed over it very quickly, I felt, after the game. And obviously they go from one game to the next game, don't they, on Sky. So it was, I think they asked Jamie Redknapp and he kind of really brushed over it and then suddenly turned it into a great result for Liverpool. They're back in winning ways and you know, held out and blah, blah, blah. So look, it's very easy to do that. But I think, no, certainly I do hope that they, I say they look at it, but of course, look, we could get into a big conversation now about VAR, which this pod isn't about.
No, it's not. It's about goalkeeping. It so we'll is. Move straight over to St. Mary's. Southampton 1, Manchester City 1. Fraser Forster with his 200th appearance in English football, this one, which was funny because it was Oriol Romeu, the Southampton midfielder, his 200th Premier League appearance for Southampton. So both enjoying a 200.
Well, there you go.
Nice little link for you,
what
mate.
Are the chances? What are the chances? Fantastic.
But a good save, a good block to deny Raheem Sterling.
I mean, you thought you'd just get goalkeeping goodness on this podcast. We pull out some stats. We really do. Really good block, though. Yeah, really good. Got himself across the goal well, moved over to his left. I mean, everyone always used that comment about Fraser Forster, the fact that he is a physically so big. But, of course, in this situation, you can see when he's coming across and Raheem Sterling with the finish. But the speed at which he gets across, credit to Fraser Forster, moves across very quickly, spreads in the way that he does, and he is so big, it's going to have a bit of an impact. But what I was actually quite impressed with here was, yes, he makes a save, but it's then the speed again in which he managed to sort his feet out and flick the ball away. Because I think if he doesn't do that, if he isn't quick enough to do that, then it would have been a very simple tap-in for Sterling second time round. But no, very, very good save.
The goal?
No, I've watched this a few times. Now, the only thing you might say is, what's his position on the cross? Because the ball's crossed in, headed from about 8 yards, but it is pretty much on the back stick, in line with the back stick at the time that it is headed towards goal. So I think for me, look, can you come for the cross? Well, I think if you take 5-6 yards as your starting position, which is a very, very advanced starting position, not many goalkeepers would do that. Then if you are that style of goalkeeper, then yes, maybe you could come for this cross, but you're then very much leaving yourself open for potentially getting beaten at your near post from the free kick itself. So I think he's probably taken up a true position of 3-4 yards. And if you're looking at that, then he needs to travel 7-8-9 to his right-hand side, back post in order to collect it. Then when you look at it like that, I certainly wouldn't expect it. It just doesn't look great because he does think about coming. And of course, when you half go and then you retreat and you're not quite able to retreat to your line, then I know there was one or two comments on the commentary, but I think it's more just the fact that he ends up in a position that doesn't really give him much chance of making the save.
Goodison, where Everton lost at home 1-0 to Aston Villa. Jordan Pickford, two good saves from Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Philippe Coutinho, the header that he tipped over the bar. Unfortunate, I think, with the goal from Emi Buendia.
Yeah, nothing more you can do on the goal, really. You're not going to leave that and expect your man on the line to head it away. And it was quite high as well. So I think in that moment, again, you haven't got time to have logical thought in that moment. It's just one where you see the ball, you react, you go as quickly as you can to get it. Top hand, gets fingertips to it. And unfortunately, just one of them when it takes it away from the man on the line and into the top corner. But you mentioned a couple of good saves. I think the one with his feet was offside, unfortunately, not that it matters. It was still a great save, moving across to his left. And this was, for me, I guess, classic Jordan Pickford in that he is very sharp. And this
Pickford-esque,
it was Pickford-esque, I would say. The way in which he moved to his left and sorted his feet out and kind of volleyed it away. I just thought it was a very good reaction, unorthodox. Certainly wasn't textbook, but I think we talk about manufacturing a save, you know, and doing whatever you need to do to keep the ball out of the net. That was certainly this.
I liked his reaction, looking at the line. I say, no, don't give it offside. Yeah. He just made a great save. Emi Martinez, by the way, obviously involved in that game, signed a contract extension through to 2027. Bumper.
Which is big for Aston Villa. Of course, they spent a lot on him. So to tie him down now for that long, that for me is a big statement from Aston Villa. And certainly, I guess when you look at the Villa team and where they want to be going, it's players of his calibre they want to be bringing in. So I guess when you have got players in the team like that and you can tie them down to long-term contracts, then I'm sure the Villa fans will be delighted.
Before we go on to our next game, I have a question for you, Richard.
Go on. Not another fact.
Kind of is a fact.
Oh, go on then.
Which goalkeeper has made the most saves in the Premier League so far this season?
What's the number?
84 saves.
I think that's going to be David De Gea. And the reason I think that, because I actually saw that and that's why I asked the number, because he has made more saves combined than Alisson and Edison. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. No.
I saw it. Someone put it out as a stat, which I thought was very... Whether that's the case now, actually, after today's game, maybe not, because Alisson did make several today, but he was a good... I think combined, they were about 77 or 78. And of course, David De Gea was 84.
So that's really where we talk about these stats and how goalkeeper stats can be skewed. I don't know what to make of this one, because this is a goalkeeper playing for one of the, you know, top seven sides at the moment. The closest to him is Ian Melier with 71 saves, but 84 saves, David De Gea.
Which I think highlights just how good of a season he's having. And it's nice. I know we keep saying it, and I feel like probably need to be careful ourselves in that we keep referring back to previous narratives and what have you. But it is good, and that people are now starting to really take note of just how good he is looking. And it is... And I've said this before, but I'll say it again because it was really highlighted in this game again. His body language is brilliant again. He just looks like he's up for it. He looks pumped up, looks like he's enjoying it. It was actually the celebration for me after they scored the winner and they went to David De Gea. You saw the celebration and it was quite nice to see. It did remind me a bit. There was, and again, this is for those Friends fans that are out there, when Ross does a celebration of sorts. Now, do you remember that, where he kind of makes a funny squeal and does his celebration? Because David De Gea wasn't the most natural celebrator. It was kind of a jump and his arms going everywhere and legs going everywhere, and he looked like a really excited school kid.
Yeah, but great to see as well. After the game too, there's just an element of steeliness in him at the moment, isn't there?
There is. And again, look, solid performance again. I mentioned the save earlier that had similarities to the Aaron Ramsdale save, which I thought was very, very good. It is just that. It's, you know, look, we talk about goalkeeping so often in terms of psychologically, if you are at it, how much of an impact that can play. And I think, look, more than any other position on the field, I think it's fair to say that the psychological element plays such a big part. But I think just that, being motivated, and of course, it's easy to say you're playing for Man United, you should be motivated every single game you play. But of course, when you've played as many as he has, which has been so many now, you think how many seasons he's been there, brilliant for so many seasons. Is it natural to have a dip at some point? I guess so. Like, it can get to the point when you feel like you've done everything you set out to achieve, maybe, and it's just to continue. It's another season. And especially when things aren't going overly well, then how do you always keep your levels as high as you need to? And you're going to get managers sometimes you don't click with, maybe goalkeeper coaches you don't click with. But no, certainly this season, whatever he's done over the last 6 months or so, credit to him, because I think when we had that conversation, in particular after the penalty shootout, Europa League, wasn't it? Which was, how long ago was that now? So
it was the end of last season.
Last season, so 6 months or so. You know, at that point, you kind of felt, oh, are we going to see David De Gea next season? Is this now changing of the guard? Is it going to be Dean Henderson moving forward? And David De Gea will, at some point, possibly make his way back to Spain, and that'll be that. But credit to him, whatever he's done over the last 6 months, he is, well, quite clearly the informed goalkeeper right now.
Over to Elland Road, where Martin Dubravka kept a big clean sheet as Newcastle beat Leeds 1-0. And Ian Meslier. No, sorry, Melier. No, sorry, Melanay. No, that's
what's
right.
What's that, Tim?
Ian Meslier, Tim Sherwood. That's his name. Get it right, for crying out loud. Had something of an eventful game.
He did, yeah, yeah. Ian Melanoma, he was...
What's up with that? I'm being a bit ranty and moany, but...
Do you want a glass of wine?
When you tell someone your name, and as a pundit, you should know the footballer's name. You should know their name. Just get it right. Mm. Get it right. Mm. Why do you keep getting it wrong? And so wrong. Melanay. Mm. Ian Melanay. I mean, come on.
Yeah, so true, Mark. No, it is so true. No, it was. And it was frustrating. I mean, look, he was excited in that moment. And he got a little bit mixed up. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt.
Fine.
But actually, the fact that he was hammering him as much as he was, let's not give him the benefit of the doubt at all. No, look, a bit of a mixed bag, really, for Meslier, I think it's fair to say. I think that, let me just check my notes I made, because he did make a couple of good saves in this game, it's fair to say. Let's touch on them first and foremost. I mean, it doesn't mean a lot where it makes a great save in the last minute, actually down to his left. But of course, when you end up losing the game and you feel potentially responsible for the goal, then yeah, it doesn't quite have the same feeling. But the goal itself, yeah, look, it's one that he knew instantly he can do more with it. Why does he make the error? I think that the fact there are those men in front of him, there's a few flailing legs. It does at one point look like one of the players is going to make contact with the ball, and that will no doubt have had an impact when the ball's being flashed across and he's just seen for a second, he thinks one of them's going to get a foot on it. That will have taken his concentration ever so slightly. And in that moment, he then doesn't quite get the impact on the ball in order to make the save. So look, is it an error? Yeah, of course it is. And he'll hold his hands up. But just to give an explanation as to why he's potentially made it, for me, it's as simple as that. And unfortunately, he then had a moment after that. And you often see this, and it's again, something we talk about quite regularly. Do you have the ability to quickly wipe it from your mind and play the rest of the game as if you haven't made the mistake? And there was just a moment soon after where the ball sort of squirms through him and it just looks untidy. It doesn't come to anything in the end, but you just felt in that moment, has that previous moment impacted you? Again, still a very, very young goalkeeper. He's having a very good season all in all, I think it's fair to say, but moments like this, no doubt he'll learn from.
Okay, Chelsea 2, Tottenham 0. Another quick question for you, Richard. Mm. Are you aware of the dip and the aerodynamics when it comes to goalkeepers parrying balls away? And did you know that sometimes when they do parry said balls away, it puts fullbacks into reaction mode and it puts pressure on them?
Right, that's what it does. Thank you, Gary, again. And you know what? You're going to be disappointed in me.
Go on.
So we were watching that game and I told you I was going to send a text to someone.
Mm.
Which I did.
Yes.
That said person.
Yes.
It was
Martin Tyler.
I then deleted it.
No.
Yeah, I
deleted After you it. Sent it.
I sent it.
So now he's going to think you sent him nudes by accident.
Yeah, because it does now have the message has been deleted. Yeah. I sent it. I actually then said to myself, I sent it deleted. And I was like, come on, Rich, just send it. What's the worst that could happen? I've just explained to Martin the reason that he parried it. Because I thought, look, if anything, maybe if I can then infiltrate Martin Tyler. Is that the right word, infiltrate? Not educate. That sounds a bit patronizing. Basically, if I can somehow be Martin Tyler, that's what I'm thinking. How can I do that? If I can like transfer into his butt and then start to give quality information. So I was just thinking in that moment, I can send that text. He's going to read it. Maybe he has that moment while watching the game and commentating where he says, actually, Gary, here's the reason. And then maybe Gary Neville turns around to Martin and says, do you know, thank you, Martin. I stand corrected. I don't know anything about goalkeeping. I kind of, in my mind, that's how I saw it playing out. But then I realized that's not going to happen. Actually, if anything, I probably don't get a response to the text. So I deleted it.
Well, that's a shame, because I think a bit of advice that you'd give to a goalkeeper is to have the courage of your convictions.
Mm,
and you've not had the courage of those convictions.
feel like you're double daring me, aren't you?
Go back in, and then you'll delete it again.
I can't delete it for a third time. If I send it again, I've got to stick with it and leave it. But essentially, the text, I probably still got it on copy and paste. I could probably find it if I were to look. But the text basically just gave a reason to why he parried. If you actually watch the replay, you can see that the ball, as it's firing towards him, it's obviously a wet surface, whether that's rain or whether it's just the pitch being wet. And the ball was clearly very, very wet. So, look, the ball's fired to his right hand side, and it's hit with pace. It's not chipped in. It's hit with pace.
I don't think it's fired, though, is it?
It's reasonably quick. It's quick enough for me. Okay. The fact that it's a wet ball, these Premier League balls, I know we had this chat with Casper, didn't we, about the Premier League balls. And he's got a decision to make. Now, it's one that if it's in his midriff, yeah, he'll cup it and that's not a problem. The moment you have to then dive, you've got a decision. Do you feel like you can hold it? Can you grip it? Or if you're unsure at all, then of course that's where a big parry into a safe area makes sense, which is exactly what he did. And it was a big parry, safe area, very good goalkeeping. It just doesn't look excellent because it's not one where he's full stretch. It's only a collapse dive and he decides not to hold it. Now, am I saying that he can't hold it? No, he possibly could. Is it worth the risk of holding a slippery ball that's being fired in towards you? I'm going to use the word fired again. But it's being fired in towards you. Or is it safer to do a big parry into a safe area? Definitely the latter. So I've got absolutely no problem with his choice of goalkeeping here. It's just the fact that, yes, it wasn't full stretch. He's got two hands to it. Could he hold it? Possibly. But I fully agree with the decision making.
Okay, that's fine.
But that wasn't the text. That would have been quite a long text if I had sent all of that. I kind of managed to condense that. Yeah, I managed to condense that. Do you remember that back in the day where you send text and you get like 150 characters? You didn't want to spend more than 10p. So I tried to like reduce it as much as I could. But that was essentially the message.
Okay, well, Hugo Lloris,
yes,
the man in question, also has signed a new deal. A couple more years at Spurs.
Which I'm delighted with because, I'll be honest, I didn't see that coming not so long ago, purely for the fact, we spoke about it so many times on this podcast, that I don't think he gets the respect, if that's the right word, or maybe the recognition that he deserves, because I think he's been so consistent. I know we've mentioned stats from time to time, but he is always up the top in terms of shot stopping and cross-taking, distribution. Look, distribution isn't fantastic. It's not Edison's level, but certainly it's more than good enough. I just think for where they are, where he is, it's a really good fit. So, no, personally, I'm delighted that we'll see him for that little bit longer.
Kepa made a good save in that game right at the end from Harry Kane. Just a quick word on him. That's four games for him now as the number one, because as we keep mentioning, Edouard Mendy is away on AFCON duty. He seems to be pretty solid, I think, for me. He's done well.
Been very good. Very good. And I think goes back to the point we've made before about a goalkeeper going into an environment and having a manager that has his back, goalkeeper coach, environment, etc. I just feel that Thomas Tuchel's played it very cleverly with Kepa. And I'm sure he's genuine in what he's saying, but he does really like both of his goalkeepers. I don't think he's got any issue with either. Now, the only thing with Kepa that you always think, or you might think, is the fact they bought him for as much money as they did, surely he can't sit there and be a number two. But if you're going to take away the fact that they spent what they spent on Mendy and spent what they spent on Kepa, as a one and two, you're delighted with that, I think, in the Premier League. You know, it's arguably up there as the best one and two, certainly in the top two or three teams in terms of their goalkeeping department. It just goes back to that question. Do you have someone that you spent 80 odd million on sat on the bench? Ordinarily, of course, you probably wouldn't, but take that away. And I think they're very, very happy with their goalkeeping department right now.
Is that the best one and two of all time? What's the best Premier League one and two of all time? I mean, you don't have to answer it right now, but that's a question, isn't it?
If only we had Twitter. We could put that on Twitter, and I'm sure we'd have a flurry of messages coming in.
I was having a good night until then. Cheers.
Yeah, sorry, I've just reminded you of that. Best one or two all time. I'm trying to think of some of the classic ones from back in the day. This is where maybe you've got some of the international teams as well, like some of the classic England one and twos. Go on, just give me one quick fire.
I mean, international is slightly skewing it, isn't it? Because you're picking the best of the bunch. It's different to have a one and two at club level, right, because so it's thinking more tactical as to who you have as your one and two, isn't it?
True. So you'll be thinking back in like the Van der Hal, Schmeichel.
I knew you were going to say that one.
Well, did you though? No, because I was actually going to go Gary Walsh and Schmeichel, because that's more the era of us, isn't it? And then Gary Walsh stepped in several times and ordinarily did very well, it's fair to say. But that was kind of more my era being a United fan.
If you were to look back now, at the time it wasn't quite as impactful as it could have been. But Liverpool, for a period, had Friedland James, right? Brad Friedland, David James. When you look back now at their careers, that's a cracker of a one and two.
Well, the other one that was obviously on the bench a lot for Liverpool, but I don't think ever played a game, was Tony Warner.
Right, yeah.
With the nickname Bonus. That's what the Liverpool squad called him, Bonus, because the amount of bonuses he made, but never made an appearance. But yeah, you're right, there was Brad Friedel. But at the time, Brad Friedel obviously wasn't maybe seen in the same light, because at the time it hadn't really worked out quite as he had intended. It was only really thereafter that he went to Blackburn in particular and did as well as he did. And even David James, did he quite get the acknowledgement when he was there?
That's another one, isn't it? So many goalkeepers that we speak to and goalkeeper coaches say that he's one of the best they've either played with or coached. But it's just funny how that translates to fans and onlookers, doesn't it? More modern times, I suppose, as well. You look at that Burnley, it was a 1-2 and a 3, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Heaton, Hart and Pope.
Yeah.
I mean, not specifically in that order, but that's a cracker of a
It was ridiculous when you had like three England goalkeepers. Again, it's not so long ago. And we were saying at the time, they've essentially got three England goalkeepers who are in and around the England squad, all in the same team, all at Burnley. Mm.
Perhaps a separate pod.
Indeed,
there
you go.
This is a greater discussion. So to just finish on the Premier League, Watford 0, Norwich 3, a long-awaited and much-needed clean sheet for Angus Gunn, given his chance now because Tim Krul is out injured for a period. Good to see him back in action.
Yeah, an opportunity for him. I mean, it's been, an interesting year with the loan at Stoke, which didn't quite go as he would have intended. Obviously, he's got his opportunity now back at Norwich. And as you say, he will have a run of games upcoming. And what a great way for him to start that massive, massive victory, to see Norwich out of the relegation zone. And this really is an opportunity for him to stake his claim.
It is time for the EFL overview. Richard, will start in the Championship, where Neil Etheridge was back to his best for Birmingham. He kept out Callum Stiles, Victor Adeboyejo and Colton Morris. Birmingham beat Barnsley. That was a first win for him as an individual since April last season. Matty Sarkic obviously out for the season. He has gone back to Wolves, which was a shame because he was in running for the clean sheet club king.
He was, and he certainly gave it a very good go in a team that, it's fair to say, have been struggling this season. But it does give a chance for Neil Etheridge to once again stake a claim. And yeah, you're right, he was very good. Good save in the first half, mid-left. But it was a save after that, which for me, great set position above his head. And the agility he showed to get himself up, and the power. And that's certainly a word we use a lot with Neil Etheridge. You know, really powerful goalkeeper, big goalkeeper. But the speed at which he got his hand up, big firm hand, ball moving all over the place. Stunning save.
Yeah, Blackpool Millwall 1-0 to the Tangerines. Bart Bielkowski and Dan Grimshaw with a few saves apiece. Grimshaw with a match-winning save in tipping Tyler Bury's late effort. That was just wide. Luke Southwood and Jack Bonham both coming for crosses in their respective games. Both, unfortunately, seeing the ball end up in the net. Reading losing against Huddersfield and Stoke beaten at home by Fulham. And Bree Samba, quite the afternoon for the Nottingham Forest goalkeeper. Picked up a bit of a lump on his head and enjoyed a bit of a spat with Ravel Morrison. It was Nottingham Forest beating Derby in the Derby, of course.
It all kicked off, didn't it, just?
It did.
It really did. And it was quite interesting to see in the way in which it did kick off and Bree Samba's role in it, and that he runs over, hands behind his back. It was that made me smile, really. It was like he didn't trust himself. Like he made sure that his hands stayed behind his back the entire time. But he looked like he had a bit of a smile on his face as he was saying whatever he was saying to Ravel Morrison. Yeah, he certainly enjoyed that.
It was clever because that reminded me of the type of argument you used to have in a playground where you wanted to swing for him. I bet Ravel Morrison just really wanted to swing for him because he was just baiting him, wasn't he? Just baiting him. But the lump reminded me of like a Tom and Jerry cartoon. You know, when they get whacked on the head, it's like, comes straight out. Incredible.
Yeah.
He played on,
just put a bandage around his head. Well, it's what you love to see though, right? Terry Butcher-esque. The other things you mentioned, just to touch on one or two bits and pieces. Save from Daniel Grimshaw, just wanted to mention. Down to his left, really important save. Big win for them. They're having a great season, Blackpool, it's fair to say. Well known, they haven't got a big budget for that league, but certainly giving it a good go. And Daniel Grimshaw in particular, the fact that coming from Man City at Hemel Hempstead not so long ago on loan, and now to be playing and playing as well as he is, a massive word unto him.
Onto League One, and it is back, my friend. The Amos spread, back with a vengeance. This one from Verdane Oliver. Wigan beating Gillingham just. Doncaster, a fourth win of the season for them against MK Dons. Lewis Jones, clean sheet, nearly done by his own man, by the way. Ollie Younger, that was quite remarkable. And Sam Long, this was one that I watched and just instantly was like, wow, what a save from the free kick. Lincoln winning at Plymouth, a phenomenal stop.
It was, indeed. Yeah, really good stop. Over the wall, gets himself full stretch to his right. It's just the way in which the ball actually comes out. I don't think it hits his hand. It must almost be the wrist or something, because he is absolutely at full stretch. And it's the way in which he parries it back into play, but with such height and such power. Yeah, really, really top save. And yeah, I knew you'd pick out the Amos spread. It has been a while since we've seen the classic Amos spread. Very, very Amos-esque, it's fair to say.
That's definitely the on-running gag, isn't it, of this particular podcast.
We have a theme, don't we? And I think it's not the best theme.
Just keep peddling the same old nonsense. On to League Two, where there were clean sheets apiece at Gander Green Lane for Liam Roberts and Dean Boutsanis. Shamal George returning for Colchester, a clean sheet and two good saves from Connor McElhaney and Matt Smith. Drama at Glanford Park. Rory Watson, unfortunate to be on the losing side here. A really good tip over from Finn Azav, and then the penalty save from Mickey Dimitriou, which was nearly earning Scunthorpe a draw, but Nick Townsend also made a penalty save from Miles Hippolyte. Joe Day missing, by the way. This is worth noting for Newport. Joe Day missed one game with COVID, I think at the turn of the year, and since then has not been able to get his place back because Nick Townsend has kept that number one spot. And Carl Rushworth of Walsall, an eventful afternoon at the Bescot. They lost 2-0 to Exeter, but made a double save from Afrande Zanzala. He tipped one over from Matt Jay, and he pushed one wide from Archie Collins.
Yeah, it was certainly quite an entertaining or eventful day for Carl Rushworth. It was one of those games where he's made, certainly the double save, was one of the best double saves I think I've ever seen. The speed of reaction, just phenomenal. And then on the flip side, I think there was a couple of moments, certainly bits and pieces that he'll learn from. One in particular, I think it might have been the first goal, the cross that comes in, isn't quite able to get himself out of the block. And they did that several times to him. So it's just one of them trying to find a strategy to get yourself out of the block. In fact, that's been a bit of a theme of this weekend. We've seen that a few times where goalkeepers that are blocked on corners and having a strategy to somehow get out of that and give yourself a little bit of room to operate is so, so tough. And I do feel that if a striker does it well, which they certainly did in this case, nearly impossible. You know, they are wrapping their arms around you, they've got their back against you, and you're trying to get away. You almost need to give them a bit of a nudge to give yourself that room to operate and come and catch the cross. But it's so, so difficult. And certainly, I think it might have been the first goal, he just wasn't able to do it, and it's a header that obviously ends up in the net. But he makes another excellent save in this game as well. So it'll be one of those where he'll come out having made some of the best saves of his life, but at the same time, naturally, there'll be that little bit of frustration. You mentioned as well Liam Roberts, two brilliant saves in his game. And as you say, a couple of goalkeeping heroes with Nick Townsend and Rory Watson. And credit to Nick Townsend. He does this every season, though, I feel, that he's not necessarily given that number one spot outright, but every single season he finds a way of getting himself back in the team and ordinarily performs brilliantly. So, no, really pleased to see him do it once again. And in the end, a match-winning penalty save. Okay, it's that time of the show that we move on to this. Clean Sheet Club. Yes, indeed, it is the Clean Sheet Club. And Matthew, you have challenged me to try and read this without pausing, which is giving away the illusion because, of course, people think that I do this so fluidly. But actually, that is not the case. I'm normally stopping, starting, asking what some of the comments mean because they're normally quite alien to me. But I'm going to just try and read this. So here we go. No breaks. We'll start in the Premier League. Angus Gunn back in the club for the first time since March last year. Emi Martinez, six for the season. Martin Dubravka, second win and second clean sheet for club and goalkeeper. David De Gea, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Everybody in the goal, so come on, let's dive. Aaron Ramsdale, 4 from 6. Nick Pope, dope. Kepa Arrizabalaga, Lager, Lager, Saving, Mega, Mega, Saving. Daniel Grimshaw, 2 on the spin. Nathan Baxter, ditto. Wes Fodringham, 5-8 since taking the gloves. Ben Hamer, 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 Don't Dream It's Over. David Button, onwards and upwards. Dimitar Mitov, 3-5, straight wins for the U's. Craig McGillivray, back in and back clean. Lewis Jones, 3's up. Josh Vickers, enjoying his longest run of games since February 2020. James Trafford, 2 Bolton games, 2 Bolton blanks. Ron Hoffman, you mack 'em, he tack 'em. Ross Doohan, a spectacular 7-8. Luke McGee, coming close, was super 6-9. Mark Oxley, hasn't missed a league game since March last year. Lawrence Vigouroux, hasn't missed a league game since February the year before. Aidan Stone, since taking over from Lucas Kovalan with 2-3. Joel Coleman, taking over from Jay Lynch with 2-3. Sam Hornby, taking over from Richard O'Donnell with a second shutout. Shamal George returning to wash the covers. Nick Townsend, knock, knock, knocking on Newport's door. Dean Bouzanis, ever-present Aussie. Liam Roberts, ever-present Pommy. Cam Dawson, finishing with 3 on the bounce.
Wow, there he is. I think I'm going to have to chuck in a little applause there. Here we go. Very good, Richard.
Thank you.
That was seamless.
There you go.
That was seamless.
Yes.
Any recognisable musical references there?
There was Lager, Lager, Shouting. Yeah.
Very good. Here we go. Let's have a bit of that.
Well, there you go.
Just about right for tonight, I think, that kind of music.
Mm. I'm not quite sure after the glass of wine that I've just had. It doesn't quite feel right.
But very good, mate. That was impressive because that was a bumper clean sheet club. In League Two alone, 12 clean sheets.
Yes.
Don't know whether that's the biggest that there has ever been since we've been doing the clean sheet club. But the table, a few changes, nothing major. Still out in front is Edison with 12-22. But joining him at the top of the pile now is Luke McGee of Forest Green Rovers, 12-25. Ross Doohan, 11-20. And then the other 11 clean sheet guys below him, Sam Johnston, Gavin Butzunu, both in 24 games. Liam Roberts back up there in 25. And Mark Travers, 11-26. So it's all go.
It is all to play for. I mean, it's all they're talking about. GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way. GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way.
Yes, a few more movers and shakers in the goalkeeping transfer market this week, and they are Connor Hazard has gone from Celtic to HJK Helsinki. That's on a one-year loan. Christian Walton from Brighton to Ipswich. That is now a permanent deal. Robin Olsen on loan from Roma to Aston Villa. Ivan Konovalov from Rubin Kazan to Livingston. That's a permanent deal. Jordan Wright from Nottingham Forest to Lincoln. Jonathan Mitchell, technically unattached, to Doncaster. And Nathan Harness from Charlton to Dulwich Hamlet. That is a loan deal. And Cecilia Ranarstoltia from Everton to Bayern Munich. That is a loan deal.
And I'll pick up on one of them in particular. Christian Walton has signed for Ipswich, as you mentioned, on a permanent, which is, I think, for Ipswich, fantastic. You know, you look at a guy that's played so many games at Championship level, maybe unfortunate never to quite get his opportunity at Brighton, and certainly haven't seen him now. And I was at the Ipswich game myself yesterday and made a crucial, crucial save at 1-0, and just all-round game I thought was superb. Really uncomplicated goalkeeper, very effective in what he does, but certainly for Ipswich to land him in League One, certainly he's a goalkeeper that can take them to Championship and maybe even beyond.
One quick question before we move on the GKs on their way, is transfer fees now seem to be undisclosed everywhere you look, which has kind of ruined it. It's ruined the fun of transfer fees. Why is it now that we just never hear what the transfer fee generally is?
I think now, it's a great question. I don't know the answer. I do know at the moment there's not many transfer fees being paid for goalkeepers. for whatever reason, you know, certainly post-pandemic, and you look at where goalkeeping was not so long ago, where there were decent fees being paid, it does seem that clubs are still paying money for strikers, still paying money to bring goals to the team. But certainly other end of the pitch, I think it's fair to say that it's not quite the same. So whether that's got any impact in that, you know, certainly goalkeepers that may have been brought in for a certain amount of money or a certain expectation as to what they should move on for, and the selling club not necessarily wanting that to be known, that could be a reason. But genuinely, I don't know why it is undisclosed, because as you say, it's always nice to see.
I've heard something, go Richard, on. And here it is. You know what that is, don't you?
I do. I do. Who is it regarding this week?
It is Jean-Noël Amonome of Gabon in the African Cup of Nations encounter with Morocco. Mm. An absolute launcher up the pitch.
Yes, indeed. And what a fantastic assist it was. I've got to make the point that the defender did slip, did lose his footing. So that meant that it turned it into a one-on-one. Otherwise, probably would have been cleared. But it is a lovely kick of the football.
Great assist. You've got to take them when you can get them.
Absolutely.
And last time we spoke, we mentioned the penalty saving ratio. Since then, 4 more penalties taken, 3 more not converted.
Wow.
We're now on 17 penalties in the tournament, taken in the 90 minutes or extra time, not including penalty shootouts, 8 not converted.
Well, there you go. Very similar to my ratio.
What was your actual ratio? Do you know?
That's a good question. Of course you do. I don't know. I want to say 19 penalty saves. Have I made that up? I think that sounds about right.
It's impressive.
I was reasonably good at that.
Is that including shootouts?
Oh, of course. Absolutely.
Okay, not as impressive. Yeah. And just to finish, we're going to cover a bit of Scottish football, the Scottish Cup, because Kelty Hearts, the fourth tier side, got a big win over St Johnstone, the holders, of course, double cup winners last season. And Darren Jameson, the Kelty Hearts goalkeeper, made a very good double save in that first half.
Yeah, brilliant. The way in which he got down to his left, excellent save. And as you say, it's not been a great season for St Johnstone, it's fair to say, after the highs of last season. But now this for Kelty Hearts, I suppose it's one of those days that will live long in the memory.
It will. Indeed, as will this podcast.
Oh, won't it just? Won't it just? People revisiting this for years to come.
Richard, thank you.
No, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, keep us
away.